Welcome. I'm Angie Cuero, sitting in for Rose Aguilar today. This is Your Call's One Planet series. Right now in Lower Manhattan, climate protesters are being arrested as they raucously call for major changes in fossil fuel attitudes and actions. They're demanding policy reform by both the government and Wall Street. A press release from New York Communities for Change says, quote, despite scientific consensus that burning fossil fuels is the primary driver of global warming, the world's 60 biggest banks poured over $5.5 trillion into the fossil fuel industry since the signing of the Paris Agreement, driving climate chaos and causing deadly local community impacts. That follows yesterday's protests, a preamble to New York Climate Week. Up to 75,000 people marched yesterday, including youth, indigenous, and environmental organizations. They want an end to all new oil and gas public project approval, a phasing out of fossil fuel drilling on public lands, the declaration of a federal climate emergency, and support for workers as polluting industries are phased out. All this against the backdrop of extreme weather events leaving a trail of destruction, forest fires in Canada, deadly summer heat, fatal floods, one that recently devastated the eastern city of Derna in Libya. Plastic is born from fossil fuels. Nearly all the plastic used in the U.S. traces back to fracking. In fact, get this, if plastic were a country, it would be the world's fifth largest greenhouse gas emitter, like so much that traces back to fossil fuels. You can't address climate change without shifting our reliance on plastic. Today, we produce around 400 million tons of plastic waste every year. Almost 40% of that comes from packaging, including single-use products like utensils and food containers. Less than 6% of the plastic we produce is actually recycled. The vast majority is landfilled, lost in the environment, or incinerated. So what can we do about the plastic pollution crisis? How do we reduce our dependence on plastic? One of today's guests, Judith Enck, was there yesterday at the protest. She says the plastics industry has known for decades that recycling is a dismal failure, but it keeps spending millions on advertising to convince us otherwise. Judith is a visiting professor at Bennington College and the president of Beyond Plastics. She's a former EPA regional administrator appointed by President Obama. Judith, welcome.
Angie, that was a beautiful introduction. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's good to have you, and thank you. Jan Dell is with us, too. She's an independent chemical engineer and founder of The Last Beach Cleanup, a nonprofit organization collaborating with shareholders and environmental groups on initiatives to reduce plastic pollution. Jan also headed an advisory committee that pushed for a landmark truth in labeling law in California. Starting in 2025, that law will prohibit companies from placing recycling symbols on products that aren't widely recycled in the state. Jan, welcome to you as well.
Hi, thanks very much. Hello from down south in California.
And Judith, over to the East Coast for this. You were part of the march yesterday. So what was the mood of the crowd? Are we looking at anger, you know, happiness that they're all getting together and fighting for the same thing? What was the mood overall?
Oh, there was no anger. It was really positive and joyful. And what I loved was a feeling of fellowship. I have not seen a lot of our allies since pre-COVID. At a political march like this, we had hundreds of people, volunteers from Beyond Plastics. In fact, one of our signs is on the front page of the New York Times today in a photograph. It says plastic kills, and it does. For me, the march against fossil fuels was very significant because on one hand, it was joyful, it was exciting, it was musical. On the other hand, I just kept feeling that the pressure is on. Mm-hmm. This summer has just been extraordinary in terms of the climate crisis, whether it's flooding or more intense hurricanes or wildfire smoke. And it's worldwide. I mean, it is heartbreaking what's unfolding in Syria and other flood-torn areas. So it was, you know, I'm not a teenager. Mm-hmm. I've gone to lots of political marches in my day, and I've never before felt both a spirit of hope and a real sense of urgency that we don't have a lot of time to solve the climate crisis. And what I loved was talking to scores of people about how plastics and climate change are connected, because a lot of people don't understand that linkage.
Well, yeah. In fact, until I was working to put this hour with Malihei Razazan's help, I didn't know the connection. And I'm, you know, pretty crazed about how much plastic we have here. Let me take this over to Jan, because Jan, you have the advantage of some distance from what was happening in Manhattan yesterday. Correct me if I'm wrong, if you were there. But I think you have the advantage of having that distance and seeing the coverage after the fact. Do you feel like outside of New York, we saw enough coverage of this in the country so people have a sense of the urgency?
Yeah, I was home down here in Southern California doing spreadsheets, which is what I do best.
What fun.
I love them. I do think every day people see the harmful impacts of plastic waste and pollution. And it was great that message ended up on the cover of the New York Times. Congratulations, Judith. You know, the one thing I'd say is just listening to the KALW announcer leading into this show, he said my favorite word, and I just jumped for joy. And that's about how your station is promoting the truth and truthful content. Mm-hmm. And I do hear it's donation week, and I'm going to go on after online and give a donation myself, because what we really need around this solving the issue of plastic waste and pollution is the truth. And that is why I joined the California Recycling Commission and then led the labeling advisory committee that pushed for SB 343. But I'm sad to tell you, there in San Francisco, you're not getting the truth about what's recyclable.
I think that's more or less across all of the country, because the money that is there to confuse the issue, to muddle the truth, that is some endless, endless money. Judith, you know, we're looking at, in fact, let me bring this up. This is something that you don't say tweeted. I guess you X'd it or whatever it is. This is Climate Week. New York City's headline partner is a notorious polluter. And this is just, it's part of the way the messaging is corrupted. What was that piece you linked to, Judith?
Yes, that was an amazing piece written by Emily Sanders, a writer with Climate Integrity Project, and the piece ran again, I think, today in Fast Company. What Emily did was look at who is underwriting or providing financial sponsorship for Climate Week in New York City. And I tend to stay away from Climate Week because I think it's been co-opted by a lot of special interests year after year. This year is no different. One of the major financial backers of Climate Week, which technically started, I think, at cocktail parties last night, as opposed to in the streets of Manhattan, we have Nestle, which makes a lot of plastic bottled water, Unilever, which floods the world with these little plastic sachets, which is a major source of ocean pollution. They pledged publicly to stop using sachets, but they still do it. If listeners don't know what a sachet is, it's like a little, 1 ounce plastic pouch with shampoo and soap for folks who can't afford to buy a whole bottle of shampoo at one time.
Right.
Also condiments. And then the other big polluter sponsoring Climate Week is a multinational company called Saint Gobain, who I tangled with when I served at the EPA during the Obama administration, because they polluted a public drinking water supply in upstate New York, in Hoosick Falls, New York. Mm. They knew for well over a year that people were drinking contaminated water with PFOA, which is one of the PFAS chemicals linked to a number of health problems. Mm. And they didn't tell the public. And they also fight the cleanup. How is it possible that Saint Gobain is co-sponsoring Climate Week? You may as well have a cigarette company sponsor you know, a conference for doctors and nurses on respiratory problems.
Actually, so, I did cover a story where it was, I think it was either Coke or Pepsi, was sponsoring a medical conference. So it does happen.
Oh, it does happen every day. And I, you know, the great thing is we can never lose our sense of outrage. But having these polluters co-sponsor Climate Week is really most unfortunate, because what we need them to do is help solve the problem. And I can tell you, Saint-Gobain, Unilever, Nestle are not doing that.
Jan, let me take this over to you, because, of course, you helped to head up that battle to get the recycling symbols off of products that aren't widely recycled in California. It's window dressing if you say, well, this is recyclable and it's got the code number on it that says, and nobody's recycling it. Talk about how the industry tried to defeat that and which industries they were.
Sure. You know, this is an example of when there's an absence of strong regulation or any regulation, industries run in and create their own fake standards. And then they spend lots of money, they get them entrenched, and they say, when society catches up and says, oh, no, this is a problem, they say, oh, no, well, it's entrenched. You know, those are the labels. And then we have to spend years and years fighting it to undo it. And that's actually happening in chemical recycling right now. When we work to push truth through, and again, SB 343, which was championed by Senator Ben Allen, is called Truth in Labeling. And what it is about the truth. And what we want in California, and what this pushed for, is just simply the truth on what is recyclable. And it's really important for listeners to understand that there's three parts to something being recyclable. It has to be collected in a curbside bin, which is often the easiest. But then the facility it goes to has to sort it. And that's where it all really breaks down. Really, only ones and twos, bottles and jugs, are sorted. Why? Because part three is there has to be somebody who wants to buy that material and recycle it. Mm. And the truth is, the vast majority of plastic products, vast majority, are worthless waste. But I really do want to hone in down into San Francisco, because unfortunately, actually, acceptance recycling list is one of the worst in the country.
Ouch.
And I've had and I have a son in San Francisco. I just help him move. And I saw the big recycling bin at his apartment complex, and it was filled with all these worthless plastics. And I went on to the recycling list of what's accepted there in the city by the recycling company. And it's Looney Tunes. It's crazy. On the list says plastic utensils. Okay, those have never been recycled. Coffee cup lids, containers, and clamshells. There are no factories in America who want to buy that plastic waste and recycle it. What happened in the past is that a lot of that was collected and just exported to Asia. We worked really hard to stop that. China said, no, we don't want it anymore in 2018. Then it started to go some other countries, but they've said no. But your list, what's bad about an acceptance list like this is that the city and the recycling company are saying to San Francisco residents, oh, a plastic utensil is recyclable.
Yes.
So when people go to the store to make a decision on what to buy, they'll think, oh, well, that's accepted in my recycling bin. Cups and plates are actually accepted in your recycling bin. There is no factory in America who has ever or will ever recycle those. And these should not be on the list. We need to be truthful with people so that people can make good decisions about what they're buying.
Well, now, let me see if Judith has some input on how the consumer is with this. Judith, being the president of Beyond Plastics, I know that you deal in part with good communication around this. I know that every time another story comes out that says, oh, well, XYZ went into the landfill because it really wasn't recyclable. Those of us who like meticulously, okay, here the cans are going to get donated for this cause and the plastic goes over here and this is Ridwell, so the plastic film goes over here. And then we hear these stories and we're like, what is the point? How do you communicate to people there's still a point?
Yeah, so we always say, please continue recycling metal, paper, cardboard, glass, because that actually is real recycling. Compost your yard waste and your food waste. But when it comes to plastic, we need to be super careful because the plastics industry has spent millions of dollars trying to fool the public into thinking that if you just toss plastics into the recycling bin, it gets recycled. And everything Jan Dell just said is absolutely correct. And so, you know, this takes a little bit of explaining, but I typically say, look at the tiny little number on the bottom of your container. Mm-hmm. If it has the recycling logo of number one or number two, you typically should put it in your recycling bin. Those are like clear drink bottles and milk containers and laundry jugs and shampoo bottles. There are a couple communities that say they take number five, which is polypropylene, which is like medicine bottles and margarine tubes. I'm a little skeptical if they actually are going to market number five. Mm-hmm. But just look for number one and number two. Also talk to your local recycling coordinator, but oftentimes waste haulers and local governments, like in San Francisco, for some reason, are telling people to put more plastics in than are actually recyclable. So the real solution here is to do everything possible to avoid plastics for your packaging, but it's really, really hard. I mean, I work on this every day and I go to the supermarket and I can't avoid all plastics. And I just want to take a moment to explain why plastics are not recyclable.
Yeah.
Unlike an aluminum can or a newspaper, there are many different types of plastics. They're called resins. Mm-hmm. There are thousands of different chemical additives used in plastics and many different colors using colorants. So in your own home or apartment, you might have a bright orange hard plastic detergent bottle over your washing machine, and your messy refrigerator might have a clear squeezable ketchup bottle. Those two plastics cannot be recycled together. They're too different. You're not going to get something that is marketable and can be used in a recycling context. Mm-hmm. The people who know this better than anyone are the plastic producers. You know, they make this stuff. They know you can't recycle it all together. And yet they have spent millions of dollars confusing the public. And it's really just recently and partially due to Jan Dell's work at the last beach cleanup that we are getting the word out. Keep recycling, keep composting, but don't put non-recyclable plastics into your recycling bin, because what happens is it gets to a material recovery facility. So the taxpayers have spent money collecting the plastics, sorting it, and then it only winds up getting landfilled or incinerated.
So don't get discouraged, but do it right.
Correct.
Okay. That's Judith Enck, visiting professor at Bennington College, president of Beyond Plastics. Jan Dell is with us, an independent chemical engineer and founder of, as you just heard, The Last Beach Cleanup. That's a nonprofit that collaborates with shareholders and environmental groups to reduce plastic pollutions. Let's do bring you in on this. Our phone number is 866-798-8255. If you'd like to contribute your thoughts to the program, 866-798-8255. Do you recycle your plastic waste? And do you get discouraged when you hear those stories? What questions do you have for our guests? Have you come up with an environmentally friendly alternative to plastic? And how easy did you find that to be? We'll take your calls at 866-798-8255. Jan, let me talk to you about environmentally friendly alternatives to plastic, because a lot of us, you know, we want to use cloth bags when we can. We tried. There are even little bags you can take to the grocery store for your vegetables, so you can eliminate those tiny bags as well. Where do you see some of the alternatives that people might be less familiar with that we need to get the word out about?
Well, the obvious ones are the ones we should do, which are reusable water bottles everywhere. These are just easy ones. Just take your reusable water bottle. Yay, San Francisco Airport was one of the first airports to ban the sales of single-use plastic water bottles. That's an obvious one. Definitely take your bags back to grocery stores. That's actually something I've been fighting. I call it the great store drop-off charade.
Yes.
I've put trackers in plastic bags, and I've put them at Target, Walmart, grocery stores down here. Closest one in San Francisco was actually Sacramento. And they're not going to recyclers. They're going to landfill. One from a grocery store in Southern California went to an incinerator. And I've even tracked them to a dump in Malaysia.
Wow.
So do not think that if you collect your plastic films and put them back in this store drop-off bin, if you can find one, it actually works. I just want to say there for a second, you know, we can't avoid plastic bags on bread. Right? Mm-hmm. For example, you want to eat bread. What I do there is I collect them and then I try to use them a second time to clean up after my doggies, right?
Yeah.
And so that's at least going to avoid a different plastic bag. So that's a good thing. So avoidance, just to go reuse. Starbucks is launching another cup reuse program to the extent that you can just bring in your own mug somewhere. That's the best. I'll tell you something Judith recommended to me, and I love it, is actually a home carbonation machine that you can just make your own bubbly water at home. And you use these canisters, and it's so easy. And there is almost nothing in my recycle bin anymore. I used to put cans in it. I don't even need cans anymore. So that's actually a really good solution. There are other innovations. So reusables are always the first choice, but what I really like seeing is actually in Europe and France. They have a law, for example, that plastic lids on coffee cups are not allowed. Mm. So Starbucks is using a wonderful fiber paper lid. No PFAS, no plastic coating. It's recyclable or compostable. I've talked to NGOs that represent trees, you know, in the paper world. And they said, no problem on that. We're not going to have to cut down the boreal forest to get those. They're FSC certified. So I'd really like to see is companies like Starbucks take those innovations that they've done in other countries where they're required by law and bring them here. There's really no excuse that Starbucks shouldn't have paper lids instead of plastic everywhere.
You know, we're going to pick, there's another example of that. We'll pick that up on the other side of this break. We'll also talk to George, who's holding on the phone from Mill Valley. Quick email from a listener. The solution is to outlaw production if the industry refuses to rake it back. No exceptions, no obstruction. If the manufacturers refuse to cooperate, then the plants need to be shuttered. We'll see how effective that might be when we come back with my guests here. I'm Angie Coro. I'm in for Rose today on Your Call. Welcome back to Your Call. I'm Angie Carter, in for Rose Aguilar. We're talking about plastics today. Judith Enck is with us from Bennington College. Jan Dell is with us from the Last Beach Cleanup. And as promised, we're going to go to George in Mill Valley, who's been patiently holding for us. Hi, George. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good to have you.
Yes. Okay. I just want to make two comments. One, real quickly, I and another small group of people have been asking for over 35, 40 years for example, the Green Party to run for local elections, winning a local election, then to move up into state assemblies and build a strong base. It's a refusal to do that that's helped to put us in the situation that we're in, just to demonstrate and be able to speak out on something, but place yourselves in positions of authority or power that can make the changes makes us just as culpable and responsible.
George, let me ask you, when you get a no, when you're putting that out there and you get a no, what are you being told about why they won't do it?
It's better to run for president because you'll get more advertisement. You'll spread out the word larger among the public, and the public will hear your magic words and magically rise up against the people in charge and in power. It doesn't happen that way. Base structure's built. And the second thing I'm going to add very quickly to anybody listening to this program that thinks they want to get angry and not vote for Biden, even though I'm a Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren supporter, to put Trump back in office. Good luck with that.
Oh, hey. Okay, now you've given us all nightmares. Let's take your earlier comment to Jan Dell. Jan, you know, you often see more willingness to engage about possible change from, I'm sorry to use this term, but third parties. And you do kind of wonder why we don't see them starting on school boards and city councils, as we've seen from a lot of groups from the right. So do you have any thoughts about trying to bring that, integrate those ideals into A, the first-ranked parties, and B, maybe get the third-ranked parties to get more active on the lower levels of the ballot?
Well, first I want to say, George, I know how you feel. I've been around many rodeos and had a career. I've worked for 40 years, and so you can really get frustrated after a while. I think the overarching thing that we should push for at every level is truth. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's actually, again, what your announcer said at the beginning. And so at the local level, you know, at all the different levels of politics, this is not my specialty. Again, I do spreadsheets and facts really well. But taking this message on whatever it is, whatever the issue is, you know, my son actually lives in San Francisco, says, Mom, you know, why don't you work on some of these other issues, you know, that are so important? And I say, I would like to, but it's not my area of expertise. But if I could help make truth happen in this area, you know, maybe it'll make truth happen in another area. And then again, as your announcer said, then when we have the truth, then we can have fact-based decisions, we can have real solutions, and we're actually operating based on what's really the facts and the truth, science-based discussions. And I think that is what's changed around 2018, and certainly in California, when China stopped taking all this plastic waste from us, then, and it stayed here, we started asking, wait, what's happening? And you know, it's always been a curtain we couldn't see behind. The waste industry and the plastics products just said, oh, put it in your bin, just trust us. There was no visibility. Well, 30 years ago, I worked with Nike and Mattel and all the supply chain companies to actually figure out where all their products were coming from and to work with them. And they were very good companies to make sure their supply chains are responsible. You know, some of the coffee companies worked all the way back to which tree is the coffee bean coming from. But we haven't seen that transparency on the other side. Where do things really go? And I actually just want to just bring a little bit more facts to what Judith said. The situation in California is that there is only a market for ones and twos, bottles and jugs. It's just not a one and two. It's a bottle and jug. There is no factory that recycles polypropylene. The closest factory is in Alabama. It costs way too much to truck it to Alabama. And so actually Cal Recycle's own data shows very little is actually sorted. Very little polypropylene is actually sorted or baled and sold in California. And why is that? I've asked the plastics industry on webinars, on commission meetings, why don't you build a factory in California to recycle polypropylene? And they all say it's a money loser and they will not build one. And so that's really the situation that we've got here. It's only ones and twos, bottles and jugs. Little known fact, green. There's no market for green.
Right.
So if you use a one or two bottle and jug, again, not single use, but you have a big detergent bottle, happily put that in your bin and just try to avoid everything else. The things you can't avoid, try to get like a second use out of them, you know, like the plastic bag.
Right.
But I want to tell you a happy story.
Actually, I need to scooch over to Judith here. I want to hear your happy story, but I know Judith has a lot of thoughts about what we're talking about. We also have callers online. I'm going to ask you to hold while we hear Judith weigh in here.
Well, I agree with George that we need people who are committed to environmental protection, especially reducing plastics and the climate crisis, to run for local office. What I'm observing around the country is a lot of the more innovative and effective public policy measures are first adopted at the local level. And then if we work really, really hard at the state level, nothing significant has happened in recent memory at the federal level. During the Obama administration, there was a federal law reducing microplastics in soaps and cosmetic products, which is important. But like so many other issues, it's so difficult these days at the federal level. It doesn't mean we don't try. But the real progress is being made locally and in a few states, and locally because often it's the local government that has responsibility for waste disposal, not the state. And I think that's where we see Beyond Plastic, local groups and affiliates and our volunteers really making progress, is start locally and then you kind of climb the ladder. And eventually you get to state and federal.
Yeah, we actually have seen that work in a number of issues and for on the larger scale on parties trying to make their way up to greater visibilities. You start small. Amy, you have been waiting online in Berkeley for some time. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Yes. One issue that there's no way that I know of to get by in terms of consuming things that come in plastics that are probably non-recyclable are prescription medicines.
Yeah.
I'm a caregiver for many elders in the family, and the amounts of plastics that we generate is just astronomical. I was wondering if there's any kind of movement. I've asked our pharmacist if we could at least get them in, I'm sorry, I'm out of breath. I was running for the phone. If we could at least get them in like little Ziploc bags, and they said they can't dispense them that way. Is there any kind of push for changing how prescription medicines are dispensed?
Let me take that to Judith, because of course you're with Beyond Plastics. Is there any effort in that direction?
Well, that's a hard one. I mean, most of these little prescription medical bottles are number 5 polypropylene, and they could be in number 1 or number 2 plastic, so you could get it recycled. A citizen reached out to me last week to ask, could we have reusable, refillable prescription bottles, because you're typically getting them from the same pharmacy every time. I think that's going to get us into some pretty complicated FDA territory. I want to hear from Jan on this, but could prescription medicine just come in number 1 or number 2 plastic rather than number 5, which is non-recyclable?
Jan?
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to say, you know, for all the plastic pollution and plastic waste that's made, I think Judith will agree that we're really focused on getting rid of the non-essential, right? When you start talking about medical plastics, certainly in a hospital or then for prescription drugs, they play a really vital role, right, for health and medicine. They aren't just a lid on a coffee cup. So when we get into these topics, I think we do have to be really careful. And I'm sure, first of all, bless you for being a caregiver. Oh, my goodness. But you see all these pile up. Those plastics have a really important value, transporting medicine. So we need to be careful. That said, I don't see any reason why they couldn't be out of number 1 or number 2. If they're too small, they won't get sorted. I've started to see online just some news reports come out about how there's this new sort of packaging to use for pills, more of like prepackaged pills that can be done in paper. And so if we could get to that, that would be one way to reduce, I think they call them blister packs.
Yes.
And that those can be done. So at least you're pulling it off and you're getting a lot less plastic and then paper on the other side. And that would be a way to reduce. But again, when we start talking about medical issues and so on, I do think we have to really respect the purpose of what the plastics are. And there's just so much to be done in the unnecessary plastic space.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Judith, with your experience at the EPA, I'm going to take Philip's email to you. Philip says, hi, would you please talk about the hazards to health that occur when plastics are incinerated?
Sure. Thank you for that question. Well, plastics is very much an environmental justice issue because most waste incinerators are located in low-income communities of color. So at the waste end, recognizing that, you know, about 95% of plastics never get recycled, they're either going to go to a landfill or an incinerator. If they go to a municipal waste incinerator, when you burn plastic, you do get small amounts of dioxin, which is one of the most toxic chemicals known to science, coming out of the smokestack. If the air pollution controls on the smokestack capture the dioxin, then you may get it in the incinerator ash. One of many reasons why I am not a supporter of incineration is because it's polluting. It hurts low-income and minority communities that are already overburdened with too much pollution. Mm-hmm. And also, it's expensive, and it doesn't eliminate the need for landfills. For every ton of garbage you burn, you get about a ton of ash that needs to be dealt with. And when you burn plastic, dioxin is a byproduct of the combustion. And if I could just take a moment, the even more significant environmental justice issue is the production of plastic, which mostly happens in Louisiana, Texas, and parts of Appalachia. Beyond Plastics just hired this amazing woman from East Palestine, Ohio, who was dealing with the toxic train derailment there. Jessica Connor is our first Appalachia director, because we don't want Appalachia, meaning mostly Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia, to become the next cancer alley. And there is a stretch of the Mississippi River in Louisiana where there's such a concentration of petrochemical facilities that we are seeing significantly higher rates of cancer and other disease. And that part of the state in Louisiana is actually called Cancer Alley, including from people who live there. And my goodness, what kind of society are we living in where we just kind of toss around the phrase Cancer Alley? And what for? A lot of it is due to single-use plastic production, which we know there are alternatives.
We're going to head on back to the phones. A lot of people have been waiting. Peter, do we still have you in Florida, do we?
Yes, you do.
Hi.
But you mentioned about aluminum being recyclable. I'm just Googling around. Aluminum is resource intensive to extract aluminum from bauxite ore. Someone's got to run those machines. They put pollution into the air. Once you get the aluminum ore, you got to then put it in a factory and make it into sheets and make it into aluminum cans and paint it and then ship. It's all expensive. Don't fool yourself. It's like you don't want to say, oh, it's not plastic, but aluminum is recyclable. But it's still expensive to the environment to extract aluminum. Basically, what I'm saying is forget the Coca-Cola. You know what I mean? If a 12-ounce can of Coca-Cola, forget about the price. It's expensive to the environment, and it's not nutritious. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not
although nutritious. You're threatening my ginger ale, Peter. I don't know about that.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I
you're
do.
Not off the hook because you're using aluminum. The cost of the environment is tremendous.
I really appreciate you bringing that up, Peter. Thank you very much. Jan, I'm going to equate this to something that happens here in California. I've even seen columns written about this. We have a lot of drought out here, not coincidentally this year, but drought is what we do here. And you want to save water. At the same time, you can't recycle such and such a plastic unless you want to wash the leftover soup out of it or whatever. And so you're down to, well, do I waste water or do I recycle the plastic? And Peter's saying the same thing. It's like, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
You know, I'm so glad Peter brought up the bauxite mines, because this is great. You know, aluminum cans, I agree with Peter. Yes, they're recyclable, but that doesn't mean they're reusable. This is one of the things that all the products industry and plastics industry have tried to confuse us with. They hold up a PET plastic bottle and or a can and they say, oh, this is recyclable. Well, no, there's a lot of material lost in trying to recycle it, and energy, and for plastics, microplastics are made up. You know, on aluminum right now, only 50% of all the cans sold in America are actually collected and recycled. That's terrible. And that means we need lots of more bauxite. And if you just Googled it, Peter, you saw horrific pictures. The bauxite mines are in Papua New Guinea and places without any environmental controls. And so this is why, to the extent that, you know, we can avoid, you know, if you use a can and you enjoy a soda or a beer or what have you, make sure it goes in the recycling bin. Judith can talk about how important bottle bills are for getting back those cans. But then segueing to what your question just, Angie, was about plastic recycling, the amount of water that someone would use in their home to try to clean something is a terrible waste, which is another reason why we really need to make sure that these acceptance lists only reflect ones and twos, bottles and jugs, which on the whole you could just empty out and put in a bin. Mm-hmm. But one of the key reasons we don't have actual recycling operations for plastic is because it's very water intensive. A plastic recycling factory uses 10 pounds of water for every pound of plastic recycled. And so we don't have enough water in California. That's one of the reasons we don't have very many recycling facilities. We don't have paper recycling facilities. And our paper gets exported to India and Indonesia, where, unfortunately, lots of studies have shown, and Bloomberg reported on, there's so much plastic waste, mm-hmm. plastic film in our paper, it's polluting other countries. So anyone listening, please, 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 if you have a plastic film or a bag, don't put it in your recycling bin. Tell everyone you know. Put it in the trash can. Try to avoid it. Put it in the trash can. If it goes into a recycling bin, it ends up with paper, it goes to other countries, and it pollutes other countries.
And Angie, yeah. If I could just get in on the point, obviously, we're all consuming too much stuff. Mm-hmm. And we can't recycle our way out of the problem. I would direct your listeners to the website of a Berkeley-based group called The Story of Stuff, which is named after a great little animated film done by Annie Leonard, previously, who was the head of Greenpeace. And it just like raises the question, you know, we're over consuming. And as Americans, we buy a lot of stuff that we may not need. If you have to buy stuff, let's make sure it is reusable or refillable. So my organization, and you can look this up at beyondplastics.org, plural, beyondplastics.org. We have published short reports on how to reduce plastic at restaurants, how to reduce plastic at dry cleaners. You know, more and more people concerned about plastics are getting reusable dry cleaning bags. Yes, they're made from plastic, but you can reuse them for thousands of times rather than the film plastic. And we also have a great report on how to promote reusables at Meals on Wheels programs, that vitally important program that feeds seniors all over the country, has a built-in return system. When a volunteer drops off a hot meal, the volunteer can take back a reusable packaging that can be washed and sanitized, and then new food put into the packaging, and saving Meals on Wheels from having to buy new packaging every single time. The thing about tackling the plastics issue is it's not just one thing. It's about a bunch of different steps, and it requires us to just think a little differently. But once you get into the habit, it gets pretty easy. I remember when the plastic bag ban took effect in New York State, which is far, it's a much better law than the California plastic bag ban, because the plastic bag ban in California isn't really a ban. It allows for thicker plastic bags. Mm-hmm. The New York statute is full stop plastic bag ban. People grumbled a little bit in the beginning, and then they just remembered to bring their reusable bags to the store. So it's just a matter of, you know, a couple extra steps sometimes, but it's not hard if we all kind of think thoroughly about this.
I hate to leave this, and I always hate leaving people on the phone. Thank you for those who have been holding. I'm sorry we can't get to you. It's just been a fabulous hour with Jan Dell. She's an independent chemical engineer, founder of The Last Beach Cleanup. Jan, can you get that website out there?
Lastbeachcleanup.org. It's that simple.
Well, okay,
and
then.
It's homemade. It's homemade. Don't expect shock and awe. It's just my own little homemade, where I just try to present the facts. But thank you. Thank you, Angie. Thank you to KLW for having us on to talk about the truth. We really appreciate it.
Oh, that's lovely to hear. I appreciate it. Judith Enck, visiting professor at Bennington College. She was a former EPA regional administrator who was appointed by President Obama. That's quite the honor, Judith, and thank you for giving us your time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Beyondplastics.org.
There you go. Thank you for getting that out there. Thank you for listening. I appreciate your tuning in. If you'd like to check out past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. You can find us on iTunes, where you can give us a review. Follow us on Twitter at yourcallradio, X, Twitter, whatever. Email show ideas and feedback to yourcall@kalw.org. Malihi Raz is on produced today's show and a dynamite job doing it. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Angie Carro, in for Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.